myself. That's all I want. Got what I want. That's all I want. I'm not sorry.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
And this is Love to See It, an obsessively detailed recap podcast about The Bachelor and other pop culture that makes us laugh, cry, and curse the patriarchy.
We can't live with these shows, and we can't live without them, but we can break down every juicy moment and unpack all the weird messages these shows send us about love, sex, and dating.
Welcome back to another special news and gossip episode of Love to See It, because ABC just cruelly withheld the next episode of The Bachelor this week, leaving all of us in limbo about what's going to happen with Clayton and Cassidy and the rose ceremony. And fortunately, there's still a lot to talk about.
Look, we continue to have just an insatiable thirst for juicy rumors and gossip. So we're going to get into some of those. And also, unfortunately, there are a few less fun Bachelor Nation news items that we are going to need to address as well.
Yeah, it's going to get more and more dark as we go through this episode. We'll try to provide a couple good feel free to get out here points for our listeners. But here to help us go through all of this is friend of the pod, Aaron Dark, who you can see currently on CBC's Moonshine if you're in Canada, or, hey, if you have a VPN.
Hello.
Welcome back to the pod, Aaron. We missed you. And I think we should start with the fun stuff just to wet our palate and really get those, like, gossip juices flowing.
Yeah, My first instinct was to front load the really dark stuff to get it over with, sort of like how I start every meal by eating all of my vegetables. But I don't think that's actually the right approach here. Let's ease in. So, first up, we have some congratulations because a lot of our Bachelor Nation buds are just having wonderful things happen in their life. So first, Derek Peth and Saffron, his girlfriend and fiance, is actually his wife. They're married.
They got married a year ago, didn't want to tell anyone. And then I think the idea of planning an international wedding during COVID just got a little too crazy. And they were like, fuck it. We're just going to make it public. We're married. They're super happy and we love them. So congrats to Derek and Saf.
Congrats.
Another one of our dear friends of the pod, Jacqueline Trumbull, recently got engaged, and she and her fiance, Paul, did a very sweet thing where they separately proposed to each other and did like a full surprise proposal at different times, which was just lovely.
Yeah, it was interesting to watch, like, on her Instagram, kind of the process of the mutual planning of the proposals. It was more just like an event they were planning together, but with little surprises for each other, rather than the traditional like popping the question sort of surprise. And it was very sweet.
Carolyn Lunny and Kendall Long were involved in Paul's proposal to Jacqueline. It also involved the doctor who's been helping all of them freeze their eggs. So Paul really, you know, put some effort into it, surprised her with the proposal in California, where neither of them live, but where the egg freezing doctor is. And yeah, they're getting married this summer. So congrats to Jacqueline and Paul.
Is there going
to
be a spinoff show about this egg freezing doctor? Is that where this is headed?
There, I feel like there practically is at this point, the number of Instagram
posts.
Yeah,
it's just on Instagram. I think her handle is like Egg Whisperer, and that is truly just information that has absorbed into my brain because I've seen her on Instagram, on other people's Instagrams.
I do think this was like a missed opportunity for these handful of women from Ari's season who all went to this egg freezing clinic together to have like a little, like a docuseries called like Egg Sisters or something where they go through the process together and like they post about it and it's great. But I'm like, where are the cameras? You know, let's really follow them on this journey, learn about their friendship, fertility. It is. And you know, I just think it's very perfect that that was involved in the proposal, kind of underscoring the connection that we place between childbearing and marriage, you know, together.
I'm sure that was in American culture. That was the intent there. Yeah.
It happened to line up. And speaking of fertility, we have a good amount of baby news. Like, bachelor people are really starting to have babies together in a major, major way. Adam and Raven just had their baby, I think, early this morning.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Breaking news.
Early this morning.
Yeah.
Yes. And we're currently taping on January 18th. So, yeah. 3:33 a.m. after an emergency C-section. Their son was born.
What's his name?
Yeah. I don't think we have a name yet.
Okay.
The post on Adam's Instagram story said just his size. He's 21 inches, 8 pounds, 6 ounces, born at 3:33 a.m. He was born through an emergency C-section after pushing for about an hour and a half. And both Raven and the baby are doing well. That sounds really brutal. I'm glad they're both doing well, but like to push and push and then have a C-section sounds so rough. I was remembering when I gave birth, I think I ended up pushing for like 4 hours, and it's really hard. It's very, very intense work, and your whole body really hurts afterwards. And then to also be recovering from like major abdominal surgery, I can't recommend that. But very happy for them. And
the human body is really wild. That's all I think about every time I hear about anyone's birth story.
We really like just evolved to not be the right shape to give birth to our own young, which is just disturbing to think about. Our heads are too big and our hips are too small, but congratulations to Adam and Raven. I'm so happy for them. Babies are beautiful. Speaking of babies, this is sort of older news. Kevin and Astrid, the Wentz, who met on Paradise, also had their baby on November 20th. So this was a couple months ago. Their son is named August. And a little more recent news, they all got COVID when he was 4 weeks old. Oh. And August had to go to the hospital. It sounded really awful. And Astrid, I think, was alone with him for a lot of the time because of
COVID restrictions. But luckily, they're all healthy, doing well.
Posting really cute pictures.
Very cute. All three of them. Extremely cute.
He has that, like, the baby of two really hot people look. Like, all these very perfect little features and rosebud mouth.
But also, very cute. That newborn feature, which is that, you know, all newborns just vaguely look like old men, which is so great.
It's my favorite part. The, like, perfect Benjamin Button axis.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Full Benjamin Button, but then also all of his features are, like, model-esque already.
Yeah. It's like, wow, incredible. He's really aging gracefully.
He looks like a hot, tiny old man.
Exactly. Yeah.
Babies really do Benjamin Button into, like, the prototypical baby that we think of is probably, like, 4 to 6 months old. So they're just getting younger and younger looking.
It's true.
Until they've already been
it's
around
true,
for, like,
6 months. It's true, because they, you know, their cheeks fill out.
Yeah.
It's all in the cheeks. The youth, as they tell you.
And like, when they're really young, their skin is, like, all, like, it's been bathed in, you know. I'm not going to get too medical here, but, yeah, that's when they really get those fresh features. And speaking of babies, still another Bachelor in Paradise baby.
Guys, I just want to preface this by saying that this might be my favorite piece of Bachelor news / gossip that we have here, because I think it is like the perfect pinnacle of the direction that professional post-Bachelor contestants are going. Like, I think this is a sign of where we are and where we are headed. Jared and Ashley announced the name of their baby, who has not been born yet, on Amazon Live today.
What?
We've talked about this, and I still don't even really understand what Amazon Live is. Like, maybe I should. This came in last minute, like over the wire, as we were preparing for this episode. So I didn't
saw
do
it,
a deep
and I was
dive.
Like, "We have to."
Why were they on Amazon Live?
I think they do a recurring. I think they announced their pregnancy on Amazon Live too.
Oh, wow.
I think Amazon Live is literally like a streaming entertainment show, essentially.
Okay.
Hosted by various influencers.
No, I'm
but
so
it,
old.
It must be, but I think it's shoppable.
Sure. Oh, of course. Yes.
Well, right, of course.
I hope it's not too shoppable.
This is what Amazon says about Amazon Live. Amazon Live is designed to inspire, educate, and entertain customers in a format that allows real-time brand interaction. Amazon Live helps give customers confidence to consider new brands and make purchase decisions. They're like, this is the name of our baby. Consider this
maternity
pacifier.
Dress.
I don't know.
Wait, what was the baby name?
We have to discuss the baby name. The baby name is Dawson Dimitri Haben.
Like the creek?
That was my first instinct as
me too.
Well.
I mean, oh, wait. Are they just not old enough to go
No,
there
they
mentally?
Are. they no, are. No. They are. They're our age. They're our age. And they obviously Ashley watched Dawson's Creek. Like, that's not even a question. But apparently, she's had this name picked out since she was 20 years old. And apparently, the reference is actually to Jack Dawson.
Oh, Titanic.
Leo's character in Titanic.
Wow.
And
one
Jared
two punch cultural references there.
Exactly.
And Jared, with I hope a very intentional pun, said when she told him this, I was totally on board. He said, I love the name Dawson. I also love Jack Dawson from Titanic, which you can now stream on Amazon Prime. I actually don't know if that's true. But everyone go watch Titanic. Pay for some sort of service so you can watch Titanic the movie.
Would you still name a child a name that you had picked out when you were 20?
Absolutely not.
Because when I was 20, I did not have good taste in names.
Same.
I'm trying to remember. I did pick out names with, oh my God, I can't believe I'm sharing this. I picked out names with a guy that I was in sort of like a live journal / AIM long distance relationship
with. Oh my God, Claire.
Senior year of
Wait,
high school.
What were the names? Spill the tea.
And I think that one of them was Juliet. Like, I think that I wanted to name my daughter Juliet.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very.
It wasn't even like
the
Romeo
Claire.
And Juliet thing. It was just like, I think it's such a pretty name. James, I think, was the guy's name. I've always had a soft spot for James. So, like, they weren't that weird. But then you go back to middle school, I was picking out names like Cassiopeia.
Yes.
Why go with Cassandra when you could call your child Cassiopeia? Constellation, like the constellation. Thank you.
The constellation, which features quite heavily in a little movie called Serendipity.
Oh, yes, it does.
Also a great name.
Serendipity.
Why call your child Serena when you can call your child Serendipity, you know? Wait, do you guys remember any names you had picked out when you were 20 or thereabouts?
I was very into Moulin Rouge, so probably like Satine.
Satine, oh my God. That would be a really great name, though. No one else would have that name, you know?
Why not? Me. Where are all the other Moulin Rouge fans?
Oh my God. I actually don't think I had any weird names specifically picked out, but I just don't trust myself at 20 on almost anything.
Yeah.
So. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to kind of like reevaluate that once you're 25.
Yeah, I feel
get at 30.
Yeah. Exactly. I feel like once you've entered your 30s, you're like, your tastes should go through just a complete reevaluative process and potentially overhaul.
I don't think that that's a millennial thing, though. I think that millennials are very, like, we still love Harry Potter and identify as a Gryffindor. You know, we're like, why should we have to give up on those things as we get older? Like, we still
don't name your child Gryffindor. Yeah.
You probably shouldn't. You shouldn't. No.
Or Hermione.
Probably.
Like, don't do that.
Or, yeah. I think that Dawson, the key thing about the name is that it does just, like, very much feel of an era that is 20 years ago. Like, you would expect a lot of Dawsons to have been born
in the 90s.
15 to 20 years ago.
In the late 90s.
Yeah. Late 90s, early aughts.
And she just held on to that for so long. And it's now that name really feels of that time to me.
I feel like their relationship dynamic is just very clear in that Ashley has long held intense pop cultural things that she loves, and she calls the shots, and Jared is just sort of like, yeah, I'm good, I'm having a baby, we moved back to Rhode Island, my life's fucking great, name our kid Dawson.
That is what their relationship, I think that's what you have to be in a relationship with Ashley. It's like, that's the Ashley experience. Like, you have to be like really on board with her taste, with her preferences, with the idea that she has of the life that you'll share together. And Jared can do that. So I'm very happy for them. And I'm very excited to meet Dawson Haben.
I mean, I'm just wondering, does Dawson have his own Instagram account yet? What products were they selling on Instagram Live? I'll have to go back and watch it and find out.
Yeah, we didn't have time to do the full research.
There are so many baby companies you can partner with, man.
Oh, it is so lucrative. God, if you're going to be an influencer, be a parent.
Yeah.
Have a baby just to get it sponsored.
The problem is that then eventually a baby can grow up and be like, I can't believe how much money you made by exploiting pictures of me before
I
could consent.
I really don't want to be photographed ever again.
Yeah, that'll keep you up at night.
But by that point, you've already made hundreds
of
thousands
of dollars. So much money to pay for his therapy.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we move on to sort of
yes.
fewer birth and engagement announcements and more gossipy items, I would say.
Yes.
Let's talk about...
There are a few delicious items coming up.
Yeah. Erin, have you heard what Claire Crawley is up to lately?
No.
Our former bachelorette has been hanging out with Blake Monar, also known as a week two guy on her very season of The Bachelorette.
Yes.
It's a trend.
Okay, wait. I have to Google who this is.
It's incredible. Yeah, you're allowed to Google. Just so everyone knows, we are explaining this gossip to Erin. She's coming in sight unseen. These are
unseen.
You know, unvarnished reactions.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. He has like good hair.
And then he was on Paradise and was Tatty Daddy. He had a bit of a romantic liaison with Tia Booth that ended poorly.
Oh, yes. Okay. Sure.
Yeah, I'm here for it. Like, it's unclear whether they're dating. What we do know is that Claire headed to Indiana potentially for a professional collaboration. They both work in the hair care field. But then she posted a really romantic edited Instagram reel of them like hanging out and bowling and her with his family, including his niece. I love the constant state of romantic chaos that Claire exists in. She's such a gift.
Yeah, it's like not a confirmation that they're dating, but it's certainly not something that you could look at and be like, it looks like they're just hanging out while they discuss their new hair care line that they're planning to release next year. Like, he posted a video, like a selfie video of him like clinging to her neck while they walked down the street and was like, how's walking on black ice with a grown man hanging on your back at Claire Crawley? And it's like, that's not like explicitly romantic, but it's not like we're two colleagues.
Look, if it's just about hair care, it's amazing PR.
Yes. Either
maybe
way,
they're just all stars in the game of drawing attention.
Either way, great PR for their hair care products. I firmly believe if you go to Indiana to see anyone, you must have some interest in them.
I agree. I dated a guy on and off throughout college who never went to Indiana. And then I brought my next boyfriend home to Indiana with me the first year we dated, and now we're married. So
there you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Telling. It means
pretty
something.
Telling. It does. My ex was always like, but I just don't really want to go to Indiana. And I was like, but it's to see my family. And he was like, yeah.
He's like, but it's Indiana.
But like when you visit my family, it's in California. So like, of course you want to do that. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really know what to say to that. It is Indiana. So they clearly had a very good time together and they wanted to post some splashy content about that, get some eyeballs on the situation. And they have yet to like confirm that they are dating.
But I hope we can expect to see more bait like this dropped
onto the
Absolutely.
Field timeline.
I think it is a brilliant move either way. Like, you know, we've really been in the Game of Roses mindset recently because we recorded two podcasts with them in the last like week. And whether you feel cynically about videos like this or not, like either way, I'm on board. Because
she knows what her job is.
She's fucking with everyone, including Dale, which I respect. And she's friends with this guy, or she has a fun new romance, or both.
Yeah,
exactly. What do we think it is about the week two guys? I actually, because as we know, Katie Thurston is now dating one of her week two guys, John. And I actually think maybe there is some meaning to this specific week, which is like hot enough to make the first cut, like I'm attracted to you. But then like the nature of our like on-camera interactions just didn't really translate to chemistry, but there was enough of like an initial attraction maybe. But you know, like when you get cut much later, it's like you really had a chance to like explore that relationship and decide it wasn't for you. Week two, maybe that person went home too soon. You're like, they're hot, but we didn't have a good conversation,
right? Maybe Goodbye. They're just not good on TV, not good at handling the cameras, and there's also no weird emotional ill will when you got sent home week two. Like, if you go back to that person.
Yeah, you still are like kind of friendly with them. But I do think I think some people adjust to the cameras maybe quicker than others. And it's also possible that those are some people who just like, were a little bit more awkward or weren't quite adjusted to it and not being able to like be natural. But yeah, there was enough of an attraction there. I don't know. It's a funny thing. Because
that's definitely what Katie and John have said, that John was really stiff and awkward on camera, and he did not do well.
He did not show himself to advantage. Yeah, I think it's probably got to be a combination of some people just aren't comfortable in that setting, don't show themselves well early in the season. Plus, the lack of baggage, the lack of being able to say, oh, well, she knew me and I was ready to commit to her and she chose someone else over me. That doesn't really exist when you've had two conversations.
And it's maybe nice. Like, it's maybe nice to have someone who knows the experience, like who's in it enough that like they are able
in
to share this thing.
Also.
Yeah. And like in your group of friends, but don't have that emotional baggage. So I can see how that would then become a good friendship person. And that could then turn into more.
100%. I agree.
Yeah.
I continue. May week two become the new time you want to get knocked out.
Yeah. So they'll start leaving and their exit interview will be like, well, this is disappointing, but maybe she'll circle back to me in a year to 18 months, which would be cool. I still think she's really hot. Speaking of sort of unexpected romantic pairings in the reality show universe, we've got a crossover event here. Blake Horstman of The Bachelorette and BIP is dating Giannina Gibelli from Love is Blind.
I saw this. So thrilled.
So thrilled.
I just want Giannina to be dating anyone other than he who will not be named.
Yeah, fuck that guy. I justice for Gigi. I want her to be happy. And it seems like they are having fun. She and Blake are not dating seriously, but I think they were sort of pushed to have to make a public statement through publicists about this after some very eagle-eyed followers noticed that they were posting from similarly backgrounded rooms.
Wow. Yeah,
people like, will notice everything.
People notice shit, man.
I think someone, Justin Takes the Batch, did a post assembling some of the evidence, and it was even stuff like, oh, that's like a dress in the background that you can sort of see behind him, and later you see her wearing that dress on her Instagram. Like, really, like, good evidence, like, really clear evidence, but not something I would have ever noticed. You really have to be watching. And but then at the same time, I'm like, they're both in the public eye. Like, did they really think that they were keeping things that under wraps?
I don't think they necessarily care that it was revealed. I wonder how, are you saying you think perhaps they were calculated in leaving little tidbits? Because
yes.
I could also see that. It's hard for me to know like how much thought people put into this stuff or how much of it is just like, if people spot it, then that's fine.
Yeah, I wonder how much more traction a story like this gets, how much it boosts the buzz around you if you drop little hints rather than just like putting out a story that you're both in, you know, being like, we're hanging out, having a great time. Is it better to create some mystery and speculation to fuel engagement with your content?
I don't know. I feel like when you're doing a cross-show romance, you don't need little hints. It's enough for me that you've mixed reality shows. Like, my brain's already like, oh my God, I have to put what I know from these two things together.
And apparently they met filming a third reality show.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. No.
For Paramount Plus.
I'm going to have to watch
a competition series that includes reality stars from around the world from shows like The Bachelorette, Jersey Shore, Love is Blind, and Drag Race, which is frankly an eclectic mix.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is now getting really, really in the weeds. But and I know you also listen to Dear Shandy, Charlene and Andy's podcast. And they had a caller on recently who talked about how she had been dating a guy who had been on a reality show and not The Bachelor, I think, or a Bachelor show, but he'd been on a reality show some years ago. Now he's a personal trainer. And she was like, we had this like real like hookup, long distance flirtation thing. It seems like he was really serious about it, but he knew that he was going to be taping this show, that there might be a romance component. And while he was away, it seems that he did meet someone. And she's like, how do I deal with the feelings? And I kept reading this and being like, I bet that this guy that she's talking about was on this show. Because like it is, it's like old reality stars brought together
from
into
everywhere.
A new. And it just filmed like this fall.
Yeah, I was doing a little bit of digging when I heard that episode because I desperately wanted to know. But then I think I forgot about it and like didn't continue my search. So thank you for bringing that back up.
Do we know what kind of like competition? Is it like feats of strength? Are we talking like puzzles?
The People article just says a competition series for where they will battle it out for a cash prize.
Oh my God.
That could mean so many things.
That could mean so many things.
It could be like Bachelor Pad or it could be like The Amazing Race.
I want Survivor.
Yeah, it could fully be like, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here.
Yeah. Oh man.
There's so many options.
I can't wait to find out. But yeah, I hope that this proves to be just like the site of many crossover reality romances that we can just like dissect for ages. It really is like this moment where you're like, oh my God, so that means that The Bachelorette and Love is Blind like exist in the same universe? Like, what? That's crazy. And it's like, of course they do, because they're all in our universe. But like, it feels like too much to really absorb.
I feel like this is the next iteration for long-term reality show fame. You need to start mixing with people who are in different reality show universes. And I feel like the Netflix shows are a really good crossover because they're more mainstream. It's not like it's not so niche as some of the cable ones.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder how big Gigi's fame actually is compared to Blake's, because The Bachelor is like the most reliable numbers getting like network reality show.
I think Gigi
in the
had more than
space.
A million followers.
But like Netflix has its own massive viewership.
So easy to watch Love is Blind. Like that's the thing. Yeah. I was like in a quarantine and you really come out remembering Gigi, because poor girl, that was awful. Yeah. I want her happiness.
She has 1.8 million followers. That's wild.
Yeah, wow. She really took off. And like, I feel like she, even after the initial season, it was sort of a mixed bag for her, because she came off as like really difficult to be in a relationship with, because she was always like, I don't enjoy sex with you, like I don't feel the spark anymore, like my butterflies are gone. And you're like, what are you doing to this poor guy? Then he leaves her at the altar.
Yeah.
And then on the reunion show is when he really took a hard heel turn.
Oh, like, yeah.
And we are all now ready to accept a new love interest for Gigi into our hearts after he brought Francesca from Too Hot to Handle to a party that they were both going to be attending before he and Gigi broke up. Which I just want to repeat for anyone who missed that. Just wild behavior. And then he was like, why are you two fighting? Like, I just want my two girlfriends to be here and get along. It's not a big deal.
God, you got to appreciate that they somehow got him to do that.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is worth it for me.
Well, he was doing this. He was like, I'm going to do like a crossover appeal. Like, people felt bad for me because Gigi was hard to be with at certain times. And like, now I'm going to do this crossover relationship and get a new fan base. And it didn't play well for him. It was a miscalculation, I think.
Yeah.
On that note, I think it's time for us to take a little break, and we will be back with more fun gossip. Can you keep up? I like love it.
And we're back, and we have to talk about Gabby, I think. So Gabby has been making a bit of a splash on this season of The Bachelor with Clayton. Gabby is a nurse. She's a former NFL cheerleader. She's very funny and charming, and she is also notably known for having dated both Dean Unglert and Blake Horstman.
Yeah, speaking of Blake Horstman, he is shockingly involved in two big gossip.
These are people he didn't even meet at Stagecoach. So, like,
Did you even know? Did you even know he was capable of dating women that he didn't meet at Stagecoach? I wasn't sure.
It's just once you add together the Stagecoach universe plus, you know, the Gossip Items Today universe, it's a lot of famous reality women.
What I love about Gabby is that she was not even the one putting either of these relationships out into the gossip world pre-show. These were things that both Dean and Blake had said publicly. So Gabby went on the Bachelor Nation podcast talking it out with Mike Johnson and Brian Abasolo, and she sort of cleared up what her history is with Dean and Blake. It seems that Dean is a person that she actually did date. It seemed that he did represent their relationship fairly accurately. She said he was one of her first loves. They dated like 12 years ago in college. It seems like they're on really great terms, but obviously it was more than a decade ago. So there's no lingering romantic feelings, but that kind of explains why Dean spoke about her so kindly and effusively in the press. And then they ask her about Blake, and she's like, well, Blake is someone that I had mutual friends with. We met after I finished college in like 2013 or 2014, and we never actually went on a date. She said, quote, no drinks paid for, no dinner paid for.
Well, but so, okay, so you can go Dutch on dates, you know, like, does she mean like, oh, we hung out, but never in a way that was deemed that's what a I
think
date?
I think she means like we were talking casually and we hooked up a few times, but we never like,
yeah.
She's like, we weren't like going to dinners. He was not like asking me out on a date. We
do
like had mutual friends and we hooked up.
Yeah. I do think maybe her saying that is indication that we can go Dutch on dates, but Gabby does not go Dutch on
it
dates.
It does sound like Gabby does not go Dutch on dates. That's actually my main takeaway here. Yeah. I'm learning a lot. Because I don't think that like, I think very few guys have ever paid for my dinners because I was a big no, I'll cover my dinner girl.
I was very poor. I let a lot of people pay for my dinner.
Yeah, I was like, I definitely let that. I did the offer and then was like secretly very thrilled because I was just like, I'm making no money.
Well, so here's how you date with very little money and always paying for your own dates. You go get one beer and you insist on paying for it, and then you don't go on another date for like 6 months. And that way, you know, you're really only over the course of 6 months, that's like a cent a week, you know, like it averages out.
I didn't
you
learn
just can't date much.
That you're supposed to get just a drink the first date. Like I didn't learn that when I was dating, so I would always go to dinner.
Oh no.
No, it's terrible.
Oh no, terrible. No, no, no. Terrible.
And so
oh
usually my God. It was awful. And then I would be like, yeah, pay for this dinner.
Yeah. You're like, you just took up like two hours of my life.
The worst first date I ever went on, I think, actually was a dinner because he was like, let's go to dinner. And I was like, oh, okay. And then it was really bad. And then he just like let the check sit there like right next to him. And I was like, I don't want to like lunge over the table at it, but I want this conversation to
You're
be
like, it
over.
It needs to end. We need to pay and exit.
And he let that check sit there and the conversation painfully continue for like an hour. And I was like, I wish for death at this point. But I survived and I'm here. Never go to dinner.
Oh, never on a first date. Never.
But to get back to Gabby, I actually think it's very kind of maybe sweet that Blake claimed her as an ex.
I do too. And she was very kind on the podcast. Like Brian was like, wait, what do you mean by like no drink? And she was like, oh, no, I just mean we like didn't date seriously, I think is what she was trying to say. And she was like, but I'm really grateful that they both have said really nice things. That's
I also
sweet.
Actually don't know exactly what Blake has ever said about her, because this can also be like an entertainment news thing where Blake could have been on a podcast and been like, oh, I actually also like had a thing with Gabby years ago. And she's so great. And then there's a headline that's like, Blake also is an ex of, like the way that they all call all of the people that they meet on the show their exes, even if they went home night one. It's just like, no one actually involved really thinks of the situation that way, but then the headline tells a different story.
Yeah. That is a very good point.
I'm just here to defend Blake this week, I guess.
Look, we wish Blake the best. I hope he and Gigi are having a good time. Gabby, I think, is just really continuing to prove herself a budding star in this universe. And I think we're going to see a lot more of her.
I do sometimes love to see a woman who is like older than 26, like, arrive on the Bachelor stage and just seem like, I'm just really ready to handle this level of attention.
Yes.
Like, I know how to, like, handle myself on TV, in interviews. Like,
she's like,
I'm not
a
22-year-old mess.
That's the other thing that I liked that she said. She was like, yeah, I was involved with both of them. But to be clear, I've had multiple serious relationships in the last decade that I like actually learned from.
Did learn nothing from Blake. Yeah.
She's like, that was 10 years ago. I've learned a lot about myself and how to be a partner. I was like, yeah. Again, I love a woman who's not like, my last boyfriend was in high school and that was devastating. And I thought I would probably die alone because you only get one.
Yeah. My last boyfriend was in high school and it was a really tough breakup that happened 3 years ago.
6 months ago. Yeah.
Over it. Let's talk about Cassidy, if you don't mind. I think that we can give this because she put it out there, but little spoiler alert, Cassidy spoiled something on her own TikTok this week. The Bachelor left us with a bit of a cliffhanger. Colton was asking Jesse Palmer,
every time it happens,
it's not
so
a TV
often.
Until that happens. Can you blame me?
No, no one can. Literally no one.
I think everyone is doing this.
Okay, so Clayton had given her a group date rose, and then Sierra told him that Cassidy had a friends with benefits back home, that they were planning to reunite when she got off the show, and he went to Jesse Palmer, the host, and asked if anyone had ever taken a rose back before. And then the episode ended 2 weeks until the next one. We're all left to wonder, is he going to take back Cassidy's rose? And Cassidy was like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to post a TikTok and be like, Clayton sent me home. Go fuck yourself, Clayton. Spoiling her own upcoming episode.
She was forced to take that video down, I assume, because production was like, what the fuck are you doing?
What are you doing? Do you want to be on Paradise or not, Cassidy? Jesus Christ. You're acting like someone who wants to be on Paradise, but then again, you're not acting like someone who wants to be on Paradise. Yeah, I think in her TikTok, she is basically saying oh, it's such bullshit. He offered a rose to someone who had just been engaged a week ago, Sally. But I had sex with someone a couple months ago and I got sent home. Well, go fuck yourself, Clayton. I mean, the pretext for him sending her home seems pretty ludicrous to us as well. But
she also seems like a nightmare. So it's
but he didn't seem bothered by that at all. He did not seem at all bothered by anything else.
No,
if he'd already given her a rose.
Yeah, he gave her a rose for the nightmare behavior.
It's obviously bullshit.
And then he found out that she had someone that she has casual consensual sex with when she's not dating.
Now that's a deal breaker.
That's a deal breaker.
Yeah. Okay, confession. I have not watched any of this season yet because I was out of the country and then wasn't sure if I could do it.
Fair. Although I will say that the women are proving themselves to be really chaotic.
You don't need to. So bland,
we wouldn't judge.
And I just was having trouble wrapping my head around the idea of catching up on 4 to 6 hours of that.
That's the thing about The Bachelor. That's
honestly,
too much
jump
content.
Right in. Jump right in at the next episode. Don't bother with
you'll
the first
up.
Few. You'll get the gist.
But having not watched it, just from what you guys are saying, that feels like bullshit.
Yeah, no,
it's definitely bullshit.
Basically, they rolled footage of this that she didn't perhaps know was being filmed. She told this other girl on the show, Sierra, that she has a fuck buddy back home and he's really into her, and he was called her, he FaceTimed her while she was in quarantine before filming and was saying, oh, I can't wait until you get back from the show. He doesn't know she's going to be on The Bachelor, she said. He doesn't know the nature of the show she's going on. And so she was kind of laughing about it and being like, oh, he's like, when you get back, we're going to do all this nasty stuff, I guess. We're going to watch it together. And then it gets cut off there. We don't really see any more of the conversation. And it's not the most flattering portrayal of her. The way that she's talking about it does make it seem a little messy. Why would you talk that way about it to another girl on the show and give her this ammunition, seem to be sort of glib about it? However, like, objectively, she didn't do anything wrong. Like, I don't understand. Like, the whole point of a fuck buddy is to have someone that you trust, that you know you can have, like, satisfying sex with, that you're not committed to, like, while you're between relationships, right? Like, so, that's exactly the kind of relationship you would be having before you, for example, come on a show to find your husband.
Right.
As if that's what they're doing.
Should not be disqualified. Yeah, like,
how immaculate are you supposed to be before you're on the
right,
show?
Yeah. Like, are you supposed to be, like, I guess you have to be a born-again virgin. Yeah.
I guess it's like a thing. It's like, oh, I only have sex when I'm in a serious monogamous relationship. And the last time I have one of those was like 6 months ago. But like, that's like, I guess that would be seen as acceptable. But like, it's not a realistic or fair expectation of how women should be handling their own sex and dating lives. Like, that's so puritanical.
Yeah.
It's just like wild to me that this gets her sent home. But I am interested actually to see how the conversation with Clayton
unfolds. Me too. I was going to say, I'm curious exactly what that conversation will look like.
But before it even happens, he's like, I want to take the rose back. So I don't know. We'll see.
That's what feels weird is that, like, if she just was like, if he was just kind of not into her and she's a little bit crazy and he wants to send her home, and like, that's a good excuse.
Sure, you take whatever.
That's one thing. But if you've already been into her enough that you gave her a rose and then this is the thing that changes your mind, that feels insane.
It's very odd. I think that Sierra was sort of suggesting to Clayton, not just that like she has a fuck buddy, but like the implication being that she came here with no intention of actually being open to a relationship with you.
Yes, like, I'm not all of us, you have that a fuck buddy, and you're like, the thing about my fuck buddy is we're committed to each other. We won't entertain any other relationships because we're fuck buddies, and that's sacred. That's a sacred thing. It's ludicrous.
It's ludicrous.
I think that, like, it maybe speaks to Clayton's, and then this is the last thing I'll say because I have to stop. I think it speaks to Clayton's, like, unique brand of, like, insecurity that, like, he was very responsive to Cassidy because she just, like, flattered his ego and was like, I'm immediately so into you. It's crazy. Like, I'm so confident about our connection. She was, like, throwing her leg over his knee and, like, making out with him, like, really coming on very hard with her unique and powerful attraction to him. And I think that he just, like, fell for that completely. And then the flip side is that he's, like, the minute that I question that I'm just, like, this uniquely attractive person to her,
then I no longer trust you.
And that was the only thing he was really into about her.
Right.
Like, that was the basis of his appeal.
They had no deeper connection other than, like,
she's never been into anyone else really.
Really
ever.
Into him.
Yeah.
The whole thing is very stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, speaking of things I don't understand, let's talk about Colton briefly. I hate to do this. I hate to give airtime to Colton Underwood and what he's up to, but I feel like I can't let this episode go by without saying that apparently Colton Underwood and his boyfriend, Jordan C. Brown, who is apparently a political strategist, bought a three...
Do we know for
which side?
For what brand of politician?
I mean, I think that... I haven't done a lot of digging on that. I did look briefly at his LinkedIn, but like, it was very like at the intersection of entertainment and politics sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even really know what that means, but
okay, he's a Democratic.
That was sort of, I was like, strategist. Hollywood, like probably a Democrat. I don't know. Let's look more into this.
I just confirmed he's a okay. Democrat.
They have been a public item since, I think, September or thereabouts of last year. They bought a $3.2 million house together.
Wow. That feels like a large commitment.
Yeah, it feels like a large something. Feels like a large amount of money, a large commitment, a large house. A listing referred to it as a former celebrity compound that was once the home of Jessica Simpson's parents before they split.
Oh,
So
it looks nice from the photos. I mean, in the New York Post.
If compound is being used, I hope it's nice.
Right.
Yeah.
It's either very nice or very awful.
It has a pool.
Yeah, we're talking Kennedy's or cult at that point. Exactly. Right.
There's some like nice exposed beams. Like I feel that I could see this house on an episode of Selling Sunset and it would fit right in.
It's been a very frequently updated, well-maintained mansion with an outside pool and spa and like fire pit, all the kind of things that you would want if you had $3.2 million to spend on a house. And the reason that I kind of felt like I needed to bring this up was just because I feel like it just speaks to how much of a platform he still has, like how much he has been like sort of transformed into this sort of powerful, wealthy celebrity. And I do think like sometimes we're like, oh, well, he's been canceled by Bachelor Nation. So, but he's...
Yeah, this is what cancellation does to you.
Yeah.
Gets you a $3.2 million home.
Yeah. Wild.
Well, like, look, I will say, okay, you only have to have $600,000 for a down payment.
That is true.
And we don't know how much of that is his partner.
I was also going to say, yeah. I do suspect that his partner, he's quite a successful political strategist. He worked for, I believe, both Clinton and Obama.
We don't know.
It might be one of those like we bought it together quotation marks.
Right. We don't actually know, but we do know that Colton has had a Netflix show and a $3.2 million home. I think he's
doing okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
A compound, no less.
A compound.
He is a compound.
A former celebrity compound and now I guess a current celebrity compound. Depending on how you think of Colton's public identity. Hannah Brown, her brother, Patrick, got engaged over the holidays to Haley Stevens, known better as Jed Wyatt's ex, the woman who actually came forward and claimed that they had been still involved when Jed left for The Bachelorette, where he met and was engaged to Hannah Brown. So now the quote unquote, like other woman of Hannah Brown's like public humiliation at the hands of Jed is going to be
sister-in-law.
Her sister-in-law.
What a crazy turn.
I wish everyone could see Erin's face as she processed the web of this information.
How do we think that happened?
I mean, it is very... I would have a lot of questions if I were Hannah, my brother, were suddenly like, so I'm dating Haley. I would be like, did you meet through mutual friends? Like, did you think she seemed cool when you saw, like, her interviews about how she was dating my fiancé and so you decided to slide into her DMs? Like, how did this happen?
I love the idea of, like, it's not Haley's fault. Like, none of that was either of these two women's fault. It was Jed. And so I love the idea of them still getting along. But yes, I would love to know what the moment was where it was like, oh, I'm going to date her brother now.
I mean, they had to have met on Instagram in part because of this incident, right? Like,
it seems like it can't have been a coincidence. I mean, here's the thing. Em and I were talking about this. We would love nothing more personally as two completely unrelated people who have never met any of them and have nothing to do with them. We would love nothing more than if Hannah and Haley were like, actually, we're best friends. And like, fuck Jed. Like, he's not our fault and he's not our problem. And now we're going to be sisters. It doesn't quite seem like that's the dynamic. Hannah and Haley do not follow each other on Instagram. Hannah had previously, like before the engagement, told Us Weekly, I don't choose who my brother loves and who he wants to be with, but I love him and want him to be happy.
Oh, no.
That doesn't sound like best friends to me.
No.
Yeah, that's harsh.
That sounds like a nice way of being like, I hate her, I won't disown my brother.
Yeah, it's like, anyway, I'm not going to disown my brother because of this. That's my feeling about their relationship. Us Weekly framed this as her sharing her approval of their relationship. And I was like, I don't think that's quite the read.
You're like, that seems, it really seems like a stretch, yeah. Us Weekly.
It's like, more like she's like, I condone the relationship.
Or just like, I'm not going to actively stop it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was before the engagement. I hope they're on better terms now. And
they still don't follow each other on Instagram.
I know. Hannah, that's not a
Hannah
good sign.
Didn't like her post about their engagement.
But they have so much in common.
I know. I feel like down the road, this could really be a point of bonding for them. But maybe it still feels a little too close. Like Hannah is still being dragged into headlines with Jed. Like they're all linked in the collective imagination still. Maybe in another couple years, that'll fully be in the rearview mirror.
People are going on podcasts and they're just like, remember when Hannah Brown found out Jed Wyatt had a girlfriend? And it's because of this. It can't feel good. I mean, yeah, it's like, it's not Haley's fault, but I'm sure there is just like a part of your brain that's like, every time I see her, I'm going to have to relive that and have that association. And it's going to be at Thanksgiving. And I'd rather that not be the case. Hopefully all is okay.
I hope they get through it and laugh about this one day.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember our same mutual terrible ex-boyfriend.
And now they both have great new boyfriends, and one of them is Hannah's brother.
Yeah.
It's really a happy ending.
We just want to see them all happy. Hannah Brown's boyfriend seems way cuter than Jed, which, you know, is the important thing here. He's hotter. So
I can't,
that's the most important.
I just like innately can't take people who play acoustic guitar one-on-one at you and sing. So it I think very she's bad. Better off.
She's definitely, I mean, 1,000% better off.
Betrayal or no, I was like, get out of there. He's going to do that all the time.
Yeah, she would have been stuck with this mediocre dude for like, at least 6 months.
Yeah.
Cut and run.
Yeah.
Let's power through a couple more items of gossip.
A couple very light items here. We've been seeing some cast members partying together. I think we saw a bunch of the guys from Michelle's season get together recently. And more juicily, Michael A. in Cabo with Katie and John. Along and also Andrew M.
Yeah, apparently. Katie posted, I think, a TikTok or an Instagram story that had all three of them together. And she cheekily said something like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Just all of your ex love interests.
A video with your John and Michael A. and Andrew M. And like hanging out.
Very cute. Love, you know, we love friendship on this podcast. We condone it. Another very... fun Dumois rumor that I love is that allegedly Pilot Pete and another Bachelorette dude who was not identified left a New York City bar after people failed to recognize them.
Yeah, this is the kind of rumor I'm like, I don't like to include Dumois rumors, but I like this one because it's not really like, who cares if it's
who
true,
cares?
But it is so
it's not
funny.
Really damaging, but it's hilarious.
Exactly.
But also, totally something I could see someone doing.
But also, I love the idea that, like, in order for the rumor to have happened, someone must have recognized them to know it happened.
Yes, right.
Yes. It was someone watching and being like, wow, I can't believe the celebrity that I recognize wanted people to recognize him. So lame.
But it's also incredible because I'm like, as a New Yorker, you should be aware of the fact that people very often recognize someone and actively do not enter their private space.
Yes, the beautiful part of New Yorkers.
Right.
Yeah. But Pilot Pete is like, I'm not like an Oscar contending actor. I'm literally someone who went on TV so that people would recognize me at bars and like buy me drinks and have sex with me. And like, what's the fucking point? If
he's
not
like,
going
no
to do
hot
that.
Women have thrown themselves at me at this particular bar.
New York.
And so I must not stay a minute longer.
Yeah, New York might just not be the place for you.
I think that also this probably did happen to him in the past. And he's in this tough place where it's like, unless you find like a really good way to parlay your celebrity within or outside of Bachelor Nation, your star starts to fall the longer you haven't been Bachelor. And he's now in that state of decline where it's like, it's been a couple seasons since Pilot Pete. Is he relevant anymore? You know,
he needs a good stagecoach.
Yeah, he needs to get back in the mix.
Exactly. His podcast is not enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think he needs to find a new, he like wrote a children's book, but I'm like, I don't think that's enough to keep you.
I don't think children are the audience you're looking for, but I love that you did that.
It's so like transparently pitched at like women like me, like moms of young kids who like watch The Bachelor.
I love the idea that he starts going to like the children's museum to see if anyone will recognize him. Like, any single moms here read that book I wrote?
I'm Pilot Pete. So that is kind of our last fun news item, I guess, to discuss. We are going to start getting a little bit more depressing. I think we can just briefly talk about this. A lot of people were passing this around. A woman made a TikTok. Carolyn Cronin made a TikTok claiming that Bachelor producers reached out to her to be potentially cast on the show. And then they did like a Zoom with her, had her stand up and like show her full body, and then never contacted her again. And she points out that she's like a size 6 or 8. And she is very clear that she thinks that they lost interest when they saw that she did not have sort of the very slender body type that is the body type that basically everyone ever cast on the show has. So
right.
It's a fair assumption, I think.
Yeah, there's no way really to confirm this because obviously production would never cop to this. But it's definitely very telling given the fact that we can see with our eyes how much thinness is prized on this show. And there seems to be very little interest in changing that. And I do think that TikToks and news items like this are useful in sort of building that campaign that we've seen around other identity groups to potentially, you know, publicly pressure the show to expand its idea of body diversity, which is extremely narrow. I mean, it's worth pointing out that like a size 6 is a far smaller size than the average American woman. So, you know, they are really.
Yeah. It reminded me of The Devil Wears Prada and how that's the whole thing about how Anne Hathaway's character, Andy, is not cut out for the fashion world because she's
not
an embarrassing
size?
She's a size 6. They always talk about, you're a size 6. Yeah. And it's like, she's literally just Anne Hathaway, who is a movie star and, you know, accepted as like really gorgeous and perfect looking.
And also just objectively like, very thin.
Right. And so they're just like, oh, but like you're a size 6. So obviously, you know, this is embarrassing and disgusting. We haven't progressed at all since then.
No, I mean, we haven't. Like, societally, I feel like we fetishize, like, unhealthy thinness. And The Bachelor is certainly, I don't know. I feel like I saw this TikTok and it was good for me because it, I feel like if you watch too much Bachelor, you just get used to that being how all of the women look.
Yeah,
and it was, I feel like it was nice for a minute to like hear someone talk about it and be like, oh, right. It's insane. It's insane that they're all the same size with the exact same body. And that body is almost non-existent in real life.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's so normalized. Yeah. And it fucks with your brain to only see one type of body. Like, there has been a lot of research on this. Like, when we do not see representation of different types of bodies, that actually affects what we what our brains find to be acceptable, attractive, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think and it perpetuates the idea depressing. That that's all men are really attracted to as well.
Well, that's right. You mm-hmm. can only be desirable within the world of this show, at least, if you are like a size 0 or 2.
And you may have fake boobs. You may.
Sure. Yes, you may.
You can have, but, like, the fat even, if it's all there.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, even within the world of like those sizes, like your body has to look a very specific way. It's, you know, it's not even mm-hmm. just about your pant size. It's like, do you have a completely flat stomach?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know. It's very depressing.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I think it, I can't remember the last time that we've had a woman on the show who noticeably like deviated from that body type in any way. I know there was like a plus size model a few seasons ago, I think on Chris Soules' season, who went home night one.
I was going to say, I don't think she made it past night one.
Yeah.
And I think part of the reason they've been so resistant to this is because they don't want to deal with the fat phobia that would inevitably come up if they did, you know, cast a couple token women who exist in larger bodies. They just don't want to deal with it. And they're like, there's not enough public pressure. We're not going to change anything until there is. Yeah. And I hope that this is the start of a larger conversation.
Because I feel like there isn't public pressure because we've all just been beaten down into like,
right. We're like, we're fucking tired.
Yeah. You just get so accustomed to it. I think that like the thing about The Bachelor is that like, I mean, you're talking, Aaron, about the way that the idea that like men are only attracted to thin women. And that's like societally enforced. And because like men feel come to feel that it is shameful to be attracted to women who aren't thin. And like The Bachelor is a showcase for that. It's like a way of perpetuating that, is to be like, these are the kinds of women that it's acceptable for you to find attractive. These are the women who are prizes. If you're like a top bachelor, here are the kind of women that you get to have access to. Why would you want someone who doesn't fit this mold? And so it does matter. And you know, and how it perpetuates as well as reflecting what's going on.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's very getting depressing. But we should switch to another kind of depressing piece of news, which is that it seems like maybe Riley and Marissa have broken up, one of our fave Bachelor in Paradise couples.
I know.
From this past season.
Likely that they have broken up.
Why do we think this? Tell me.
Okay, so let's lay it out.
there's a lot of evidence.
They used to post a lot about each other. They posted like produced videos of them together making breakfast on Sunday morning, like, which was like
every
their thing.
Sunday morning, because that was their thing.
Right.
Their Instagrams were full of like beautifully curated photo shoots.
They have not been posting content with or about each other since the holidays. So since like around New Year's. There were Christmas posts, but after that, it kind of fell off. Marissa has recently, in the last couple of weeks, begun to post Instagram stories in which she is clearly not wearing her ring. And Marissa has also deleted posts, like basically all of her posts with Riley from her grid.
Except for the people photo shoot. Which could have frankly been a contractual obligation.
And like old, like back when they were on BIP, like watch this episode posts.
Oh, that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like a great sign.
Exactly.
Yeah. They've also been posting sort of these kind of, you know, the kind of like shady, lightly shady things that your friends will post when they're going through a breakup or something. That's not like, FYI, we've broken up, but it's like, posting a lot suddenly about how you have to like overcome obstacles and stay positive.
Is the word overcome in a lot of them?
That's Riley. Riley is definitely doing like, you know, his last post caption was like, free a mind and everything will follow. Ooh, you know, it's a solo shot of him.
Marissa posted a meme that said, all that glitters is not gold.
Yeah.
Wow.
Her last grid post also is captioned, don't worry, be happy. And it's a solo shot of her. she's liking memes about breakups on various accounts.
I see where you guys are coming from.
You're seeing that there's like, we're not making this up, right?
Yeah,
like,
the evidence is strong. It makes strong. Me so sad.
It's compelling.
Yeah.
Same. Such a bummer because they were my favorite.
Yeah, they had like a really compelling like narrative too on the show, which is like he's been looking for that someone to have Sunday mornings with and like a life together, and hers, you know, about never being taken on dates and like really, you know, accepted and loved by someone and affirmed. And then they seemed to like have it with each other, and it lasted for like 4 beautiful months. And now it's over. Like, I can't accept it.
You know, I just, I love a good romantic narrative, and it always pains me when I just have to let go of another parasocial.
Well, because I also, connection. I feel like in the world of Bachelor, there are couples that you're like, I don't have a ton of faith in the longevity of this. And you kind of emotionally detach. But then sometimes there's ones that you let yourself emotionally attach to. And I think they were one of those for me. And so this feels very sad.
They're the only couple from this season of BIP that I was really attached to. I think I was like really ready for Kenny and Mari to break up just because I was like, does Kenny really suddenly at 40, he's ready? And with
they're still going strong.
And with Joe and Serena, I was like, Serena's so young. Like, I wouldn't hate it if she like had another chance. But I really was attached to Marissa and Riley.
I know.
Same.
They felt so good and so sexy together.
Yeah, exactly. And so over the last couple of weeks, they have both posted like a fair amount of SponCon, like in their stories. And I keep looking at the stories to see if they've posted about their breakup. And instead it's like, here's a new like cooking product or something that I'm recommending. And so I guess my only theory is maybe they're just dangling a breakup so that people will be drawn back into the drama of their story.
I would love that.
I feel like that's our only shot at this not being a real breakup, is that it's like a calculated decision to throw in a like a third act twist to get people more excited again.
Like it's like Priyanka Chopra removing the Jonas from her Instagram name, but and then just being like, this is a way for me to protect myself. But yes, I am still happily married. Here's our Christmas shop.
Oh, what, that? I didn't think anyone would even notice. Yeah.
I don't know. Is there not also a possibility that they're like having some trouble, but it's not over? So they haven't announced it and they could work through it?
Anything's possible, Erin.
I think that like it would make a lot of sense if they are on a break, they're having trouble, but they don't want to risk like a breakup and then reunion situation where it's very public. And so they're just doing this, which is still drawing a lot of attention. Or it could be that they just want to like get their ducks in a row more before they do a public announcement. I don't know.
I just looked again and I think she might have
deleted the people. That's why I gave you like a look when you said that, because I was like, I think I just looked before we taped and it was not there.
When I had looked before, she had not, which now I'm feeling very certain that there was a contractual obligation to leave that post up for a certain amount of time.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's not looking good. I do get the vibe that she feels ill done by from the way that she is.
Yes. If you
reacted compared to him.
If you've scrubbed their photo from your history, that feels like not a great sign.
Yeah.
Right. Riley still has all of the photos of the two of them up.
Yeah. So it's looking bleak for this couple. Who knows? Hopefully we'll get some kind of confirmation, some closure, so that I can personally move on with my life instead of being consumed by this night and day. It's been really difficult. Yeah. So we'll see. I think we haven't heard anything. You know, it seems like Mari and Kenny and Serena and Joe are all just like still chugging along. So,
and Becca and Thomas, right?
Yeah.
Honestly, they're the ones
they're the ones
that I'm rooting for now. If Marissa and Riley are done, then I'm a Becca and Thomas.
I also
now.
I do have a soft spot in my heart for the people who like it's like paradise is too much. They're like, what are we doing? We can't. But then go home and are like, oh no, actually, I really care about this person. There's something about that that feels right. Like maybe real.
I agree. I also just, you know, I'm always pulling for a woman in her 30s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
Becca
posted one day ago a picture of her and Thomas in front of a sunset captioned soaking in this life sparkle.
They're both so cheesy, but I think that that's just both of their personalities. So I think it works. He posted something that was like hashtag Minnow's dad about her dog.
Oh, but yeah. See, this is what Marissa and Riley were doing before. Suddenly it was all, you know, shady reposts that say all the glitters is not gold. Mm-hmm. And
we still have to let ourselves get emotionally attached, or what's the point?
Exactly. No, you're right.
You have to risk
just
the hurt.
Give in.
Yeah.
That's what love is about.
What
we've learned
is.
Anything.
We have
from
to
this
let
show.
Down our walls. Like, we've built up these walls, and like, you can't live life.
We have
that
to
way.
Be you
have to
vulnerable.
Be vulnerable.
Yes. I have to show up every season vulnerable and ready to risk being hurt. And then you find me in the limo at the end of each season sobbing. Like, I can't believe this is what happens when you open your heart. All right. I think it's time for a quick break. And when we return, we will be discussing some really heavy topics, including death and sexual assault allegations. So if you know, these topics will be difficult for you to handle. This might be the right time for you to turn this episode off. And if not, we'll be back shortly.
Can you keep up? I like love it.
And we are back. And we do have to talk about, as Claire mentioned, a few heavier pieces of news. The first is that Clint Arliss, who was best known for his Villains Got a Vill line on Caitlin Bristow's season of The Bachelorette, really tragically passed away at the age of 34. It's really, really sad.
Really sad. Appears to have been unexpected, sudden. There haven't, as far as we can find, any details published about what happened. According to Us Weekly, it is, you know, under investigation by the coroner's office, but no foul play suspected. So, you know, it's a private sort of family issue. But very tragic. He's very young and
so young.
Caitlin, I think, addressed it on Instagram Live shortly after, basically saying, yeah, I'm not involved. It's not my business, but extending her condolences. And
yeah, a few of the men that were on the season with him, including Nick Vile, also posted their kind of remembrances of Clint. And by all accounts, he seems to have been someone who was just really beloved by the people who knew him. And yeah, it's always really sobering when someone who's your age dies suddenly. It's jarring news, even though obviously we were not in Clint's personal circle.
Yeah.
But we are thinking of his friends and family during this really tough time.
Yeah, we did actually just recently talk to his good friend from the show, JJ Lane, about their friendship on the show.
Yeah.
And JJ spoke really kindly at the time just about, you know, how special Clint had seemed to him in the house. What an interesting and intelligent and just like confident, you know, charismatic person he was. And it was clear that he had that, gave that impression to the people who knew and loved him. And yeah, we're thinking of all of his loved ones right now. And now I think we have to talk about something that I don't think we really want to talk about. I don't think a lot of people in Bachelor world want to talk about, but it's out there and it's circulating. And I think we do need to try to address it as best we can.
Yeah. For those of you who have not heard, there have been some assault allegations made against Joe Coleman, one of the top three contenders on Michelle Young's season of The Bachelorette. These allegations were posted anonymously to Reddit. The identity of the poster was apparently verified by the moderators of the subreddit, but none of these allegations have been independently vetted by any journalistic outlets. So we want to be really clear about that up front. We have not reported this out ourselves, but the fact that these allegations were posted has become news in itself. And we think that it's important for us to address them and sort of pose the question of when things like this come out, you know, what should we as the audience be doing with them?
Yeah, it was hard for us to really even wrap our heads around how to address this because the allegations are really upsetting. They relate to his time playing, you know, when he was playing basketball at the University of Minnesota, and the anonymous poster claimed that they were sort of secondhand made aware of instances when he assaulted girls that he met at parties or was hanging out with at parties. And so they are like upsetting allegations. And
absolutely,
it is frustrating to know that, like, if you ignore them, that, you know, you might be allowing or like perpetuating the platform of someone who, you know, has really harmed people. But that if you do address and platform these allegations that haven't been reported out, that haven't gone through any official channels, that, you know, you could be really harming the reputation of someone who hasn't really had a chance to defend themselves. And it's just really, really, really thorny. You know, we have had instances in the past in Bachelor world where men have, you know, been accused of assaults on or before the show, and it has been reported out. And there are other instances where, you know, when DeMario was accused of assaults on Bachelor in Paradise, that turned out to be a much more murky situation that really destroyed his reputation. And so then you're in the position of, you know, talking about a black man who's on reality TV with uncorroborated allegations that can really damage him. So we do want to be really careful.
Yeah.
About that. But what is the right path? Like, we don't really know.
I think it's an open question. Yeah. And that's what's really difficult. You know, I think for understandable reasons, I have seen a lot of people calling for Bachelor production to do a better job of vetting. And I think what is so tough about things like this, that, you know, if a police report has not been filed and if someone does not successfully reach someone from Warner Brothers before or while the show is airing or before filming, these are not the type of things that are going to come up on a routine background check. And the thing that I always come back to is that, you know, in so many ways, this franchise reflects a lot of the darkest corners of our culture. And assault is no different. You know, I think that any, and this is in no means, I hope this does not come off as me trying to excuse production at all, because I do think that they absolutely should make it easier to be contacted. That is part of the reason that production started to release photos of potential cast members with some space before filming started. Like, we know that there have been people who have been cut from that final round or pulled from the beginning of filming after allegations were made. But I do think that the unfortunate reality is that we live in a society that has an epidemic of sexual assault. And if you, and a lot of that sexual violence, not all of it by any means, but a lot of it is directed at women by men. And if you are casting multiple times a year a big group of cisgender straight men to go on a dating show, it is not unlikely that a handful of those men who get cast on these type of reality dating shows will have done something violating to someone in the past. And I don't exactly know what we do with that. I just keep coming back to the idea that if it's a reflection of our culture, then we need to be continuing to try to change the culture so that this isn't something that happens so fucking often.
But we also have a real problem just with, like, when women do come forward, there's no support. There's often no justice. And especially if you're coming forward against a public figure, often it makes their lives worse to do so. So much of this stuff also gets buried.
Mm-hmm. Gets reported by someone who's heard it secondhand, because there is, as you said, less personal risk in coming forward, especially anonymously. But then it also makes it harder for, you know, people like us with a platform to sort of litigate how to talk about it. And yeah, the thing at the center of all of this is just we live in a culture that does not support people who have been assaulted, that does not adequately teach men about boundaries at a young age, about respect, that continues to enforce the idea that women's bodies are public domain, and that straight men are entitled to access to women's bodies. And The Bachelor is this very odd reflection of all of those realities.
Yeah, and like the way that men on the show become so beloved of the mostly female fan base is also kind of a reflection of that like these men are really elevated as romantic, like desirable romantic heroes based on just snippets that we've seen on TV. And we're all guilty of falling into this because, you know, you don't want to be watching and constantly being like, well, he seems nice, but he could have like assaulted someone once. So like, let's not get carried away. You know, like you want to be able to like to have some romantic enthusiasm about the men on this show. But that means that like when people are cast who have not been fully vetted or who allegations come out about later, we're left with this question of like, are we all the engine of someone who, you know, has a history of being entitled to women and women's bodies and of assaulting or harassing or hurting people? Are we all the engine of that person having more access, having more status,
right?
Which can be used to the detriment of women around them? And that is very hard to grapple with, because then what do we do about an allegation like this? Do we spread it around to cut that off, to try to get this person kind of knocked off their pedestal? Do we just all personally try to unfollow and turn our attention away? Do we wait to take any move until it's been worked through in the justice system or in the media. Like, there isn't a good mechanism.
Options seem bad.
Yeah.
Right? It's like we're laying out all the pathways and we're like, these all seem fraught and shitty and very little justice for anyone seems to be involved in any of them. And I genuinely don't know. And it's a very icky feeling to sit with, wondering what we should be doing and wondering if we have, you know, built someone up in a way that could be damaging to other people, or if we've torn someone down in a way that could be damaging to people. It's just,
yeah,
it makes you want to just
scream,
yeah. Bang your head against the wall, delete everything, never want to show again. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's really, it does feel sort of impossible. And I think we do just have to keep coming back to, like, we're here dealing with The Bachelor, just as, like, I think should be true in every venue. Like, The Bachelor should be making it easier to come forward with these allegations. Yes.
People who do come forward with these allegations better. You know, we have reported out stories, or a story that involved a woman trying to go to production, not having a great mechanism, ultimately that not seemingly followed up in a way that was satisfactory. And, like, that is where I think we can certainly hold the mechanisms of the show culpable.
Yeah, it feels like this has happened enough times now that something more needs to be done on their end. And yeah, I mean, it's clear that, like, you are dealing with, like, men and women and people's pasts. And if, like, that isn't always something that shows up in a police report. And so, yeah, accessibility of information and then someone there to, like, do the research and the background work feels really important.
Yeah, it's so hard because I do think part of what happens is that, like, you know, this post is sort of describing almost like a whisper network. Like, we were all talking to each other. We all started to realize that this was maybe not a safe person to be around in certain settings. And those are local. Like, and then, you know, he's suddenly on TV, suddenly he's the subject of gossip that is national. What is connecting that whisper network, you know, to The Bachelor? Like, are they going to go, like, party with everyone that Joe has ever partied with until they hear something? No. So, like, they need to have a very easy, accessible, supportive process for those things to be brought to them, because they're not going to be in an orbit, in a space where that's going to just make its way to production. It needs to be through pathways that they have created that are as easy to use as possible. And I don't think that there's anything else that we can really say. Like, this was really horrible to read. And, you know, we can't, you know, this is all allegations, again, that have not been reported out, that have not been corroborated to our knowledge. And so we do want to make that clear. However, it was really, really difficult to read. And if these allegations are true, like, our hearts just absolutely go out to anyone who had to experience this. It's really shocking. And
it's very disturbing. It's very upsetting. And yeah, I mean, we dream of a world in which people don't have to sit silently with their trauma and don't have to worry about whether the person that caused them pain is going to be catapulted to romantic fame. Like,
yeah,
we want the culture to be better. And I think that's all that we really can say about this. I don't know. I don't even know how to wrap this up.
Yeah. See, this is the, you know, the thing about ending with the worst news is that then you're like, well, all right. On that note.
On that note, great episode.
Yeah. Well, I really genuinely don't know how to wrap this up.
I think that we have said all that we can say on this, and I think that we just have to wrap it up here and, you know, all take some time to process and
yeah,
think about how to move forward.
And that's it for Love to See It with Emma and Claire. Thanks to our guest, Aaron Dark.
Love to See It is produced by us, Claire Fallon and Emma Gray, and Stitcher. This episode was edited by Tanika Weatherspoon. Our theme music is by Tamar Habib, and our art is by Celine Chang. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer.
If you like the show, please rate us 5 stars and leave a review. And of course, help us spread the word about our show, especially to your friends who used to listen to us as Here to Make Friends.
If you want to get in touch, you can always email us at clareandemmapod@gmail.com with your questions and voice memos, and we might even feature you in a mailbag episode.
You can also find us on Twitter at @LoveToSeeItPod and Instagram at @ClaireAndEmmaPod. And you can find our newsletter, Rich Text, on Substack at clareandemma.substack.com.
I'm also on Twitter and Instagram at @EmmaLadyRose.
And I'm at Claire E. Fallon. We'll be back next week to recap the next stage of Clayton's journey. Can you keep up?
Stitcher.